Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Bhakti Vaibhava ki
jai,
Rataraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai,
Giriraj Maharaj ki
jai,
Jaya Nitai Gopreman. There's this quote that there. So what did we discuss last night?
Shiva is a great Vaishnava, and he teaches all the materialistic people and demons to get elevated.
So we say in the first chapter of the sixth canto, it is called? Fourth canto. Okay, so the first chapter of the fourth canto is called? The Descendants of Manu. Okay, so we hear about three daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, whose names were Devahuti, Aputi, and Prasuti. So Prasuti, her daughter was called Sati. Who was the youngest daughter of Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. So then she married Lord Shiva. So then the second chapter is called Daksha curses Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva was in a trance when Daksha entered into the sacrificial arena to perform his judgment. And because he was in a trance, he did not receive Lord Shiva properly. Lord Shiva did not receive him properly. And Daksha took offense to this, being a little, or a lot, envious of Lord Shiva. And therefore, he cursed Lord Shiva. And in retaliation to his curse, then Nandishwara, who is one of the followers of Lord Shiva, he began to curse the brahmanas who stood in support of Daksha. And then Bhrigu Muni, on behalf of the brahmanas, cursed the followers of Lord Shiva. So this cursing, this counter-cursing took place. And then the whole atmosphere became inauspicious, and everyone became affected by the curses, and everyone's consciousness was somewhat polluted. So then, chapter 3 is called? The talks between Lord Shiva and Sati. So Lord Shiva, he did not respond, even though he was spoken to very harshly. He did not respond, but rather he very quietly left the sacrificial arena. This is the achar, or the behavior of a Vaishnava. That when we are insulted, we just leave the place quietly. We do not retaliate. So then, Lord Shiva, he left, and in the third chapter he begins to speak to Sati, and he explains that even though everyone in the universe is attending this second sacrifice of Daksha, that they should not go because Daksha is envious of Lord Shiva, and he will offend Shiva, and he will also offend Sati. So he advises not to go, but Sati wants to defend her husband, Lord Shiva. We should not tolerate offences against Krishna or Krishna's devotees. So she went to the sacrifice. The fourth chapter is called Satikritsa Bodhi. So Sati went and she began to speak to Lord Shiva, speak to Daksha in a very straightforward and critical way, and tried to change his mentality that he had towards Lord Shiva. And then, because Daksha would not change his mentality, then Sati, she quit her body. Self combusted her body and turned it into flame, turned it into ashes. And then Daksha continued his jagya. So then in the next chapter, is called Frustration of the Sacrifice of Jagya of Daksha. So Narada reports to Lord Shiva that Sati has quit her body, and Lord Shiva becomes extremely angry, and he wants to correct the improper attitude of Daksha. So sometimes the advanced devotees, they become angry with us because they want to correct our defective mentality. So he became very angry at Daksha, and he pulled out one hair from his head, threw it on the ground, and then that hair turned into a demon, Virabhadra, who then went and beheaded Daksha. So then the sixth chapter is called Brahma satisfies Lord Shiva. So then Brahma, he goes to first of all the demigods go to Lord Brahma, and they report to Lord Brahma what has happened, and Lord Brahma advises them that we must go to Kailas and we must beg forgiveness from Lord Shiva. So they all come to Mount Kailas, and there's a beautiful description of the auspiciousness of Kailas. So when they arrive at Kailas, then Lord Shiva is under a banyan tree, which is 800 miles tall, 600 miles in diameter. So they all go there, and they meet Lord Shiva, and we see last night when we discussed, we heard about the qualities of Lord Shiva, how he is completely equipoised, self-controlled, personality of Godhead. He is a guna avatar, extremely important. So tonight we'll finish the chapter, verses 45 to 53. We'll hear further of the discussion between Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Now tonight we'll hear that there is like some summing up of the pastime of that. We get some understanding of what are the lessons we're meant to be learning. What are the lessons we have learned so far in this section of the Bhagavatam?
You should never offend devotees.
Yeah, that is the principal instruction. The principal instruction is we should not offend devotees, because it is displeasing to Krishna. And therefore it is aparada. Aparada means it is against bhakti. It is against devotion. It does not please Krishna. So therefore, this is the principal lesson which we are taught, and this is what is being elaborated upon tonight and summed up in totality. How we should deal with this situation of avoiding committing offences to devotees. Okay. So any questions or comments?
Okay, so then we'll begin with verse 45.
Yeah, one thing, what you're asking. Lord Shiva is the friend of the entire world. And he's so auspicious. Therefore, everybody loves him.
Everybody except Daksha.
Isn't it Prabhupada Mountain in Sadi Kur?
What's that?
The Prabhupada Mountain. Isn't it in Sadi Kur?
Yeah.
So why the tree has to be there to cool it down?
Why what?
Yes, there's the tree.
Yeah.
It was so big. It cooled the temperature down.
Your questions are beyond my ability to answer. Ask my brother. Ask my brother. My brother is a gardener. Huh?
You wouldn't know about Mangala.
He's also a devotee. I don't know if he can answer the question, but if that doesn't work, then ask my mother. What's that? I can't understand. I'm not advanced enough to understand. Okay. O most auspicious Lord, you have ordained the heavenly planets, the spiritual Vaikuntha planets, and the impersonal Brahman sphere as the respective destinations of the performance of auspicious activities. Similarly, for others who are miscreants, you have destined different kinds of hells which are horrible and ghastly. Yet sometimes it is found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of this. Is he the Raja for this? You can read that.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that everything is happening. It is said, therefore, that not a blade of grass moves without the Supreme Will. Generally, it is prescribed that performance of pious activities are promoted to the highest monetary systems. Devotees are promoted to the Vaikunthas, or spiritual worlds. And impersonal speculators are promoted to the impersonal Brahmanic avengers. But it sometimes so happens that a miscreant like Ajami is immediately promoted to the Vaikuntha Loka simply by chanting the name of Narayana. Although when Ajami uttered this vibration, he intended to call his son Narayana. Lord Narayana took it seriously and immediately gave him permission to Vaikuntha Loka. Despite his background, which was full of sinful activities. Similarly, King Daksha was always engaged in the pious activities of performing sacrifices. Yet simply because of creating a little misunderstanding with Lord Shiva, he was severely taken to task. The conclusion is therefore that the Supreme Will is the ultimate judgment. No one can argue upon this. Pure devotee therefore submits in all circumstances to the Supreme Will of the Lord, accepting it as all auspicious. Tatte Nukampa Susami Shamano Bunjana Evatma Kritam Vipakam Viduvavu Vapurvir Vidudan Namaste Jiveta Yomukti Rayapa Bhagavatam 10.14.8. The purport of this verse is that when a devotee is in a calamitous condition, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord and takes responsibility himself for his past mistakes. In such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. One who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaging devotional service, is the most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. In other words, such a devotee is playing to promote him to the spiritual world.
So what are the points here?
A devotee takes it to be the divine will of the Lord for whatever happens, like we saw Narada when his mother passed away by a snake bite. He took it as the meaning. That is not. It's the way the devotee thinks, whereas the materialist thinks that why did he deserve such a thing, it shouldn't happen to him.
Good.
I will make a Krishna is called Supreme Will, so therefore Supreme Will is the ultimate judgment.
Nice.
highlights the superiority of nama bhash over karma kanda.
Sorry.
It highlights the superiority of nama bhash over karma kanda because ajami was nama bhash and then bhasha was karma kanda. So clearly highlights the superiority. The Lord is pleased with the nama bhash. He can come personally. But for a person who is offensive to Vaishnava, he may do so much of karma kanda, it's of no use. Because it's not anukul to the person.
Anything else?
Maybe even in the previous verse and in this verse we are seeing that Brahma is addressing Lord Shiva as if, you know, he has created everything, like even in the previous verse he saw like a spider where you create maintain, and here also he says you are holding the heavenly planet as if he. So is he, we know that Lord Shiva is like sort of non-different from Krishna, and you know, Prabhu has been the example of looking at it, but still Krishna is supreme and he is creating everything, then how Brahma is addressing Lord Shiva with that?
Then Lord Brahma understands the position, but he's maybe giving him respect in terms of his original position as Sadashiva, being like a form of the Lord originally. Like that. When you see Lord Shiva come from the material world as Shambhu and take that form, then he is said to be somewhat adulterated. So he's not as powerful as Vishnu at that point. So maybe because he's speaking of him that way, it could be that he's speaking to him in understanding, because Brahma understands all of this. So maybe speaking to him in terms of his being the original, his original form being Sadashiva. Or practically, even as Shiva that we see within the material world is practically as powerful as Vishnu. He's not Vishnu, but he's practically that powerful. Like that. So, you know, it's just a slight kind of like detail. So we just, you know, we, if there appears to be some sort of discrepancy, then we just rectify it by looking at the overall philosophy. So then, it's like that. It's just a technical point. Yeah, he's the original form of Shiva is Narayan in Vaikuntha. A form of Lord Narayan is called Sadashiva. So one of the, his original form is that he was Narayan. Not in Vaikuntha, no. When he comes to the material world, then it's Shiva Tattva. Like that, separate category. Any other points?
He's an expansion of Sankrishna.
Who is that? Expansion of Sankrishna. Where does it sit? Briha Bhagavatam.
A small endeavor on the path of bhakti can take you to the spiritual world, and a small mistake can really cause a hell. She's considered a child's problems. She will bother with the rising, for always even fixed on the path of bhakti, whatever is the situation. And never let the enemy arise in the heart. So when you come to small offense, then everything that you've done can be destroyed.
Good point.
I'm just saying what Usha just now said. Everything is happening by supreme will. Not a blade of grass cannot move without his will. So what we can so strong and powerful, a blade of grass cannot move without his will. So we can blame a lot of times, a lot of people, but actually it is supreme will which carries out everything in the material world also. You can listen. So we need not blame others for their mistakes.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we have to understand that everything that happens in our life is an arrangement of Krishna. It is not separate from that. Let me explain and take some questions. So, for a devotee, we understand that everything which is taking place in our life is Krishna's will or Krishna's desire. It may be that the material energy is working, but it is working for a devotee under the auspices of Krishna. It is not that anything that happens in our life is happening separately. Not like for the non-devotees. The non-devotees, they have some karma which is being burnt up Just like something inauspicious happens for the non-devotee, then that is their karma. But for a devotee, it is our karma, but it is Krishna who is controlling the material energy. So for a devotee, it is not exactly the same. The reciprocation is not coming directly from Durga, as it is with the non-devotees, but rather it is coming from Krishna. Even though he may be working through Durga, he may be working through the material energy, still it is Krishna who is doing these things. So Krishna can use our karma, which is meant to come to us, to purify us, to purify our consciousness, to bring us closer to him. So therefore, the devotee, we have to learn to submit to Krishna's will and Krishna's desire. We have to learn to understand when Krishna is acting, when it is his desire. And as Prabhupada says, when we submit to Krishna's desire, everything becomes all auspicious. Because we understand that Krishna is doing something in our lives, making some arrangement in our life. Why is he doing that? It may seem like materially things are reversing. Or we're being put into some calamity or some difficulty. But actually for a devotee, then we have to understand, why is Krishna doing this to me? Because he wants me to come closer to him. Mm-hmm. So therefore we see that, oh no, it is auspicious when we surrender to his will. Mm-hmm. So we have to learn to surrender to his will. And this is the test of a devotee. Sometimes we may have to even do something that we don't want to do. But Krishna is indicating to us that this is what he wants. So then what do? We have to surrender to his will. And we understand if we do that, everything becomes auspicious. Right? So this is the test for all of us to understand. So it takes time to develop that faith to surrender to Krishna's will. Just like I was thinking the other day, I was at the farm, I was driving the tractor, and we've been working very hard at the farm. And since January, we're very tired. I'm very physically exhausted because it's been a lot of hard work. And then I was thinking to myself, you know, why is Krishna making me work so hard? And why is there so much all these things. So I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, I'm thinking, why does he do like this, like that? But then for a moment, then I thought, you know, this is my anxiety. If I just surrender to Krishna's will, actually everything becomes very blissful. Even though materially it may be like a reverse, materially it may not be so pleasant, but spiritually it becomes very blissful. Because we surrender and say, this is Krishna's desire, it's his will, and we surrender to that, and when our consciousness is correct, everything becomes very blissful. Just like one of my god sisters, Braja Seviki, she was in a very bad car accident 3.5 weeks ago, nearly 1 month ago, between Mayapur and Calcutta. Like that. So she was driving in the jeep from Mayapur to Calcutta, and the jeep ran head first into a truck. So smashed. So she smashed from the back seat, she flew into the front window of the car. And her husband, nearly every bone in his body was broken. Like that. So they were both taken to the hospital, and she almost died in the hospital. She stopped breathing in the hospital. So I wrote to her a couple of days ago, and I said, how are you? What are your realizations? And she wrote back to me, and she said, I'm in bliss. She said, I am in bliss because Krishna has taken away all my negativity. All my bad thoughts about devotees, all those things, all that's been taken away. And all the devotees are being so kind to me that I'm understanding now this is my actual position, is just to be the servant of all the devotees. And all my false ego has been smashed and removed. And now I'm just feeling very happy and very blissful. And she said, when I touch my arm, even after 1 month since the accident happened, she said, when I touch my arm, it feels like someone has hit me with a baseball bat. That's how much pain she's in. But she said, I'm feeling very blissful. So this is understanding. This is what we have to do. We have to learn to understand whatever happens in our life is the arrangement of Krishna. And when you surrender to it, even though materially it may seem negative, then we go towards Krishna. We become very blissful. So this is the test for every devotee. So therefore, Prabhupada explains, he quotes this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now this verse, Prabhupada also quotes in the Nectar of Devotion. Does anyone remember in which part of the Nectar of Devotion that Prabhupada quotes this particular verse?
The qualification of bhakti?
When he's describing the 64 angas of devotional service, right? Then, when it describes prayer, praying to the Lord, vandana, then this is described. Prabhupada quotes this verse. So this is the mood. And Prabhupada said, this verse will give perfection. If we can realize the purport of this verse, then we attain perfection in Krishna consciousness. Because what is being said here by Lord, this verse is spoken by Lord Brahma himself in the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. So as it says, Prabhupada says, the purport of this verse is that when a devotee is in a calamitous condition, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord and takes responsibility himself for his past and his deeds. So when something negative happens to a devotee, we have to learn to understand it is because of our past misdeeds. We have no one else to blame. When something negative happens to us, it's not anyone else's fault. We always say, oh, the boss did it, or my kids did it, or my husband did it, or my parents did it, or something. We blame everyone else. No, it's us. There's only one person to blame. It is us. Because we performed so many past misdeeds in our previous lifetime. So everything is our fault. All the negative things that happen in our life, it's because of us, because we did negative karma. If you go back to the spiritual world and surrender to Krishna, and enter into your constitutional position as Krishna's servant, then there's no more karma. So it is not anyone else causing our problems, it is only us who causes our problems. Why are our problems there? Because we're not surrendering to Krishna. That's the point. So, in such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. This is the message of the Bhagavatam, that you must continue your devotional service through thick and thin. Whether something negative is happening in your life or something positive is happening, you must continue your service with devotion. You don't stop your service. Because today I had a headache. Or I feel mental. Or I have a pimple on my cheek. Or whatever it is that disturbs us, and then we can't do our service. No, you do your service regardless. Whether it's thick or thin, whether it's good or bad, positive or negative, you continue your service to Krishna. Okay. Now, one who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaged in devotional service, is most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. In the original verse from the 10th canto, then Srila Prabhupada translates, one who goes on offering his obeisances in the core of his heart to the Lord, even going through all those difficult times, whatever we're going through, but in our heart we just bow our head to Krishna and we just say, my Lord, I deserve far worse, please continue to accept me as your servant. Right? That is the attitude. For one who does that, he becomes Dayabak, which means you become... Your rightful claim is to inherit the kingdom of God. Or in other words, you will go back to Godhead. When you have that consciousness of continuously surrendering to Krishna through thick or thin, then you become eligible and you continue to thank Krishna because of the good fortune he's given you to allow you to serve him. Then you go back to the spiritual world. You become eligible to enter the spiritual world. Any questions or comments so far?
I have got one comment.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something very personal. About 40 years back, in 1966-67, my elder brother died. And my father was standing next to me. And when we were in the funeral, he said, I must have done some bad deeds that my son is going before me. He was feeling sorry, but he said it is his some mistake he has done. This is Kali Yuga. He said, I can't repeat exact words, but the purport was that it is by some bad karma that I am losing my eldest son. It is Kali Yuga. And I must have done some fault. Otherwise, I should go first and then son later.
Any other thoughts?
This verse,
quoted mostly Prabhupada says that whatever happens, it's Krishna's will, and we should surrender it to Krishna. And when talk about the non-devotees, it is because of the karmic reactions of Mahamaya. So in devotees, is it applicable for all devotees, new pious, Kanishtha, Adhikari, Madhyama, or is there any difference? Initially, it will be for even the devotees who have just taken presidential karmic reactions, it is applicable for them, or is
it's applicable for everyone except the pure devotees, like the Pandavas. Then it is explained that, for example, the Pandavas went through so many difficulties, but the Pandavas did not have any karma. So those difficulties were given directly by Krishna. So why were those difficulties given? Because it glorifies the pure devotee, and the pure it allows Krishna to show through the pure devotees what is pure devotional service. So therefore Krishna has, he arranges all those difficulties, and the devotee goes through those difficulties to show the less advanced devotees how we should behave in those situations. Okay. Our lives are not so difficult, really. I mean, you look at what the Pandavas went through. That is difficult. Okay. Our lives are not difficult compared to what they went through. But they stayed fixed in Krishna's service. They did not give up. Any other point?
This is related to that Lord Shiva is that he is Sadashiva. So people who are Saivites, if they pray to Lord Shiva, will they go to the Vaikuntha planet?
No. Because they're not worshipping him with the proper understanding that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you worship,
they consider him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah, but they're not performing bhakti. It's not an authorized process. It's tantric. It's not Vedic. Okay, so they get benefited, but they don't go back to the spiritual world. To go back to the spiritual world, you have to render bhakti. And if your worshipable deity is Sadashiva, then you'll go to Sadashiva Loka, but not by following that process. They don't follow the Vedic process. The followers of Shiva don't follow the Vedas, they follow some tantric tantra, they don't follow Veda.
So in South India we have Saivites, Brahmin Saivites, who they have bhakti, that's what they do. So they read Shiva Puran and all that, and they do Abhishek to Linga. So, I mean, they don't really tantric thing, but so when, and they say like Shiva is Jirali, the greatest. It's the same for us, Lord Shiva, Vishnu are the same, and we would do this. So, does it mean that they have a chance to go back to Sadashiva planet, which is spiritual world?
Yeah, it's not, what they're following is not Vedic. It's not in the Vedas. Everything they do is not Vedic, it is tantric. Tantric is a different thing. It is based on the tantra, it's based on a separate body of writings. It's not based on the Vedic writing. Okay.
Maybe I have a question. When it is said that any calamities come in our life or reverses come, then we have to understand it's Krishna's will. So let's say we are going through a bad period in our life, then knowing that it is Krishna's will, should efforts be taken to change the situation, or we should not even take efforts to change the situation to better? Or we should take efforts but continue our devotional service? What is meant by actually?
It's easy to answer when there's a little bit more specific. But
for example, in this recession period, we see many devotees also losing their jobs, and all this financial crisis going on in offices and all. So, and then we suppose some devotees have lost their jobs, and we understand Krishna is acting, but then what should the devotees also do? How much should we struggle, and how much should we? It becomes very difficult.
Yeah. So then it means that we have to put in the endeavor, but we have to pray to Krishna for the result. That's the Bhagavad Gita. That's what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. You endeavor, but you leave the result to Krishna. So you have to have a job, because otherwise how do you maintain your family? You have a wife and children, so you have a responsibility to maintain the family, so you have to have a job. Right? But you can try to get a job, but that's up to Krishna whether you'll get it or not. Does that answer? Yeah. So that's our philosophy. Our philosophy is that you, materially you're responsible. Rupa Goswami says this, the devotees must be materially responsible. Just because you're a devotee doesn't mean that you're irresponsible. You have to do everything nicely, but you have to leave the results up to Krishna.
And
when you're dealing with sometimes some other person is giving you some misery, it's an opportunity for you to deepen your Krishna consciousness and transcend that. Okay. So sometimes we're with another devotee is causing us some misery, but then we try to go deeper within ourselves, have a deeper state of consciousness. Right? Instead of just blaming that person or like that, but rather see, oh, Krishna's trying to purify me. He's trying to destroy my false ego.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to make me a deeper devotee, more surrendered to him. And offering respect in my mind to that person. I don't offer respect to them because they don't like me. So Krishna says, no, you have to go deeper. You have to become a deeper devotee. So you try to go deeper and try to offer respect to them in your mind and develop the right attitude towards them. So then you take it as an opportunity to surrender deeper in your Krishna consciousness. And then you do external things also to try and improve the situation. Because if you get in a deeper state of devotional consciousness, then you can deal with that person in a more transcendental way. You lose your envy towards that person. And that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us right here. That's what this whole situation is about. Just like we're studying this part of the Bhagavatam at the moment, and what's the whole point of this part of the Bhagavatam? Right? To not commit offences to devotees. So I know for myself that Krishna has arranged a circumstance where between myself and another one of the senior devotees at the moment there's some lila going on. Some pastime is going on like that. So it's like now I'm living it. It's alright to teach it. It's alright to talk about it. And it's all nice, but then when you actually go through it, then Krishna, now he's making me get some deeper realizations about it. Right? So then we have to really try to imbibe these instructions. We have to actually begin to try to live the Bhagavatam. It's not just theory anymore, but it's actual like that. So then we have to learn what to do. So then that becomes, it's not jnana anymore, it's vijnana, or it's realization. We have to try to develop realizations. How do I deal with this? Right, it's all right to say that we should not, we should live offenselessly and so forth, but now you have to actually have to come to this consciousness. And then, what is Lord Shiva's consciousness? So then we have to meditate again and again and again. How does Lord Shiva deal with all of this? So, does that help, sir?
Lord Shiva just took a hair out of some tools and created Virabhadra and destroyed the enemy.
Okay, I'll be very interested to read your exam. That's one way of dealing with life. I've been trying to do that, but the hairs are not working. I keep throwing them on the ground. I tried that one. Even I said to Krishna, just make a small bit. So many hairs I wasted. Now I have no hairs left.
But he is the largest power. I mean, he really is the largest power for just mortals. Because the Sadeva is getting extra.
Yeah, because it's the mercy of the senior devotee. Because sometimes the senior devotee chastises us.
Yeah.
But that's his mercy.
Yeah.
Now, when the senior devotee chastises, then that is the mercy of the senior devotee.
Yeah.
So Lord Shiva, because now Daksha, his whole heart becomes changed.
Yeah.
Right? You see in chapter 7, in the next chapter, when we finish this passage, you see the Daksha changes. But what did it take for Daksha to change? And Shiva had to become very heavy. So when sometimes the senior devotee is heavy, it's because they want to change our heart. So then they chastise like that. Because this is love. Just like Giriraj Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, sometimes when you chastise us, it is so difficult. You know, imagine when Prabhupada would chastise you. Right? When Prabhupada chastised you, it was like the whole earth just turned upside down. Right? When Prabhupada was angry with you, then that was cruel. Yeah, that, I couldn't even imagine what that must be like. You know, Prabhupada put his anger on you, like that. So then, Giriraj Maharaj said, Prabhupada, how should we feel? Sometimes you're very heavy with us. Prabhupada said, you should appreciate that someone loves you so much that they're willing to take the time to correct you, to chastise you. So when the senior devotee corrects us, they're doing that out of affection, but it's for our benefit.
When he saw the Lord Vishnu himself, Daksha saw Lord Vishnu as well. After he got so humble.
Yeah, in chapter 7 you see that he gets benefited by the chastisement. If we get chastised and if we don't change our heart, then what's the use? Right? If we get corrected by a devotee and we don't change, then what's the use? That means we failed. If we get corrected, then we have to change. That's the whole point. Krishna is testing. Are you going to change? Right? When Krishna makes an arrangement, just like in my life now, I'm going through some friction with one of the devotees. So then Krishna is saying, are you going to change? Right? Is your consciousness going to stay the same, or are you going to go further? Mm. Are you going to improve as a devotee or not? Are you going to realize these teachings or not? And Krishna always does this when you're studying, because at the moment I'm studying Bhajana Rahasya. So I'm studying verse 3 and 4 of Shikshastika. Verse 3 is you should be humble. Verse 4 is that you should be detached. So now Krishna is saying, you actually like this or not? Are you actually going to make some advancement or not?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Krishna is doing all this. So he makes all these arrangements in our life. To see, are you going to improve? Are you going to become a better devotee? Are you going to lose your false ego? Are you going to give up this false ego at some point in time? Or are you just going to continue on with the same false ego, the same attachment, the same response that you've been giving for so many lifetimes?
Mm-hmm.
That same response that I am right. Mm-hmm. It's always me who is right. But that Krishna at some point in time is not going to accept that anymore. Come on, you've been doing this for so much time now. Come on, now move on. Get rid of your false ego.
What I'm thinking is, like, we can never change anybody by, you know, being rude to them or, you know, doing harm to them. The only way to change others is to give them love. So through love, they will easily change, you know. That is like when you are nice to them and we serve them, then they will automatically, they also come towards us. You know? That's the only way. Other than that, others only being nice to others and being loving, kind, and being non-violent, we can love everybody. If you harm and create violence, again it will increase. Hatred is going to increase. Never going to stop. Like only by serving others, and Krishna will destroy your pride by giving misery. That is it. Krishna gives a lot of misery to destroy your pride. To be humble, to serve everybody. Then how you can go to the spiritual world and serve everybody? You cannot even serve everybody here. How are you going to go and serve the acharyas if you are not going to serve everybody over here? By being rude and harm, creating harm, you will not be able to change anybody. Being only by kindness, we can change everybody. That is the only thing.
That's good. That's a nice point.
My experience is, if someone is envious, they just stay far away. Because if you feed them with the snake with the milk, it becomes more poisonous.
but in the mind stay respectful.
Of course, Krishna devotees can never be snakes, because everybody who is connected with Krishna can never be a snake. We should never even think that they are a snake, because we think that they are a snake, but they are actually maybe not a snake, you know. But what Krishna devotees should, we should not even think that they are snakes, they are envious. The misunderstanding comes because they are thinking all this.
Yeah, it's not exactly true, because the Bhagavatam has already said, in it's good if you have like that mentality. But the Bhagavatam has already said that there are three modes of nature, and there's devotional service in three modes. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that if someone is in the mode of ignorance, which means they're envious and angry.
Ignorance and devotional service.
If someone's in someone's envious or angry, it means they're doing devotional service, but they're too much in the mode of ignorance, then Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says you should avoid them. Like that. As Rasa Balasinghe says, otherwise then they become problematic.
You keep a distance in
them. Which verse?
46.
My dear Lord, devotees who have fully dedicated their lives unto your lotus feet certainly observe your presence as paramatma in each and every being, and as such they do not differentiate between one living being and another. Such persons treat all living entities equally. They never become overwhelmed by anger, like animals who can see nothing without differentiation. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that when the Lord treats someone heavily, or when the Lord treats someone kindly, it is the same. Sometimes Krishna, you see Lord Vishnu, he holds the club and the disc. So sometimes he may give you the club or the disc. And other times he'll give you the lotus or the conch. Like that. So sometimes he's soft and sometimes he is hard. But it doesn't matter what he gives you, he still loves you the same. But he gives you what you need. Just like with the child, right? Sometimes we give chastisement, sometimes we give affection. But from the parent side, it's the same. Because he loves the child and it's for the good of the child. So that's how Krishna is treating us. So if Krishna kills a demon, it's not out of anger or malice. Krishna is doing that out of affection, to chastise, to humble him. So Shiva has humbled Daksha, but that is out of goodwill, like that. It's not out of some, not that, it wasn't like, you know, Sati died and then suddenly he lost all control and like that. No, he understood this person is in a wrong state of mind. He needs to be corrected. So then he showed this anger and chastisement. Persons who observe everything with differentiation, who are simply attached to fruitive activities, who are mean-minded, who are always pained to see the flourishing condition of others, and who thus give distress to them by uttering harsh and piercing words, have already been killed by Providence. Thus there is no need for them to be killed again by an exalted personality like you. So, Prabhupada points out that it is not our business to have to retaliate to others. Because Krishna will look after them. Krishna, as providence, will correct them. Sometimes one devotee is very negative towards us. Sometimes a devotee is very they're negative towards us in their behavior and their words and their actions like that. But we don't have to retaliate, because Krishna will correct that devotee, just like he's correcting us. We are not perfect. We have so many defects. Krishna is correcting us. He makes arrangements in our life to correct us. So when these arrangements are being made, then we have to understand, okay, Krishna is making certain arrangements to change our consciousness. So what do we do? Then we surrender to Krishna's will, his desire. Just like it says that sometimes Bhakti Devi, she takes the devotee by the hand and she teaches him how to dance. So it means that Just like if someone is teaching you how to dance, then you surrender. Right? You let your body go wherever they want to take it. Like they'll hold your hands and they'll take it this way and they'll take it that way and they'll instruct you. So you surrender to their will. You're being guided by their will. Right? You still have control. You can change how you want to move. But no, you give your independence to them. You let them guide you. Like that. So similarly, when we feel that Krishna is making these kinds of arrangements in our life, and he's guiding us, and he's trying to take us in a particular direction, then we surrender to that. And we allow Krishna to take us in this particular direction. He wants to change our heart now. He wants to change our consciousness. So sometimes when someone is being very inimical towards us, we don't need to retaliate, because Krishna will take care of it. Just like sometimes non-devotees are very, you know, under the modes of nature, you know, and then sometimes, just like out the front of the temple the other day, some two men pulled up about 9 or 10 in the morning. I was out the front at my car, and two men pulled up and they were drunk. You know, it was like 9 o'clock in the morning or something. They'd obviously been up all the night before and they were drunk, probably taking drugs and very kind of disturbed. They were insulting the devotees. The devotees were walking past, chanting everything. They were calling out there and insulting them, speaking very negative. Right? But we don't have to react, because we understand Krishna will take care of them. You know, this is the way that destiny works. So we don't have to feel it is necessary for us to get involved. You know, just like if someone's being very inimical towards us, then if we become involved, then the whole thing becomes very complicated. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's better if you just leave it, right? And then Krishna will take care of it. He'll take care of us and he'll take care of them. Because we have things in our heart that need to be purified. So Krishna will arrange that those things become purified. And he'll arrange that the other person will be purified. So it's not necessary for us to take the law into our hands. We have to have faith in Krishna. He will take care of everything. Sometimes we think, oh, this devotee, you know, they keep doing like this and they keep treating me like this and I should... No, Krishna will take care in due course of time. So Prabhupada says that a devotee has to tolerate the actions of others and keep preaching. He gives the examples of three people who were the personifications of tolerance. Who were the three devotees who were the personifications of tolerance? Haridas Thakur, Nityananda, and Lord Jesus. Right? Hare, he is also, but Prabhupada chose these three.
Okay.
If you read the purport, Prabhupada says. Okay. So, Haridas Thakur was beaten in 21 marketplaces. And he prayed to Krishna, please forgive those who are beating me. Right? Even though they were beating him again and again and again, he prayed to Krishna, please forgive them. Right? And Nityananda Prabhu was smashed in the head with a pot by Madhai. Right? And Lord Chaitanya came to kill Madhai, and Lord Nityananda said, do not kill me. Right? He doesn't know what he's doing. Okay. And then Lord Jesus was crucified on the cross. Right? They put him on the cross and they put bolts, hammered nails through his wrist, like that. And he says, and Lord Jesus said, forgive them, Father, they do not know what they do. Like that. This is tolerance. So this is what we have to learn as devotees, to tolerate. You know, we become, you know, someone just brushes past us the wrong way in Tulsi Puja. And we become like, who is this person? You know, burn them to ashes with our eyes. You know, you haven't seen. You know, you think Daksha, or you think Sati. You know, I will show you what is. Touch my arm in Mangalati. I will show you what. I'll show you how the universe can be destroyed, you know, starting with you. So this is the state of consciousness. We have to learn some tolerance. Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi Sumachena. Tarora means Tarora. Taru. Taru. What is Taru?
Tree.
Taru. It's a tree. Taror api sihishnu na. What does that mean?
More
tolerant than a tree. Right? That is Lord Chaitanya's teaching. You have to learn tolerance. Right? If you don't become tolerant, you can't make advancement in Krishna consciousness, because you'll become disturbed about everything.
When you say 21 marketplace, is it at 21 places you are looking?
Yeah, 21 markets. Right? Yeah.
21 at 21 places.
Like if you go to Vrindavan, then you have Puran Bazaar, and then just around the corner is Lord Bazaar. So they beat him in Puran Bazaar, still alive, so then they took him around the corner and beat him in Lord Bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
He's still alive, so they went to Gopinath Bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
So just still alive, they keep beating him, beating him. And after 22 marketplaces, they said, can't you die? Because, you know, this is not working. So, this is the situation. Yeah, if they went back and he was still alive, then the cousin would kill them.
Yeah.
So Haridas said, no problem, I will die. So he fell on the ground like that, but he was in Samadhi.
Yeah.
So he appeared like he was dead, but he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
So then they said, what should we do with the body? They said, you should bury him. And they said, no, because the Muslims, they bury their dead. Christians and Muslims, they bury. They said, no, that is too good a honour for him to be buried. Throw him in the Ganges. So they got his body and they threw him in the Ganga. And you know what the Ganga is like? How fast she flows? So his body landed in the Ganga and it started flowing the opposite direction. Yeah, it should have flowed this way because the Ganga is flowing like that. It started flowing upstream. And they saw his body is flowing upstream. And then they realised this is not an ordinary person. And he went upstream and he came out of Samadhi and he walked out.
We live in Kali Yuga and in this materialistic world. Suppose somebody does something to us. I mean, even though we know that it's all Krishna's will, we deserve this and all that stuff, if we do the conditioning, we immediately get angry and we think to ourselves, I mean, something bad. But, so is that, because I don't know, I've heard in Kali Yuga, if it's on the mental plane, it doesn't create any sin, only if you action it. Is that true?
Yeah.
So if you think, it doesn't count.
It counts, but it doesn't. You don't get reactions, that's all. There's no reaction. If we got reactions for what we thought, then, you know, what do we think in 1 hour? We'd be finished, so. But the point is, as we said in the beginning of this section, that if you keep thinking it, it will come out in words or deeds. So you have to stop thinking it, you have to change your thoughts. Because if you keep thinking negative things about someone, then it just comes out. My dear Lord, if in some places materialists who are already bewildered by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Godhead sometimes commit offences, a saintly person with compassion does not take this seriously. Knowing that they commit offences because they are overpowered by the illusory energy, he does not show his prowess to counteract them. So, Prabhupada points out here that the non-devotees, they become overpowered by the illusory energy. But when a devotee becomes advanced, then they are not affected by Maya. So the more we become advanced in Krishna consciousness, we do not become affected by Maya. One who is a materialist, then they are very affected by the external energy. But a devotee has to understand that when someone is being negative in their behavior, they're just acting under the modes of nature. so we don't become disturbed by them. We should understand it as the modes that are active, and it's just the representation of Maya, not to become affected by it. Otherwise we become drawn back into the material energy once again. So we should not allow ourselves to be brought back into the material energy. And we have to become released from the material energy and try to transcend back into the Daivi Prakriti, or the spiritual energy. My dear Lord, you are never bewildered by the formidable influence of the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you are omniscient and should be merciful and compassionate toward those who are bewildered by the same illusory energy and are very much attached to fruitive activities. So Prabhupada says in the purport that it is the duty of the devotee to rescue those who are condemned by Maya. This is how a devotee responds. Someone may be in Maya, and when they're in Maya, that means they may act inimically towards us. But the attitude of the devotee is to save that person, to assist that person to become out of Maya. If the person is suffering from Maya, which means sometimes someone's very inimical towards us, so that means they're under the influence of the external energy. So we should somehow act in such a way that we assist that person to come out of the external energy and become situated in Krishna consciousness. So that means you have to become very advanced. Because if you're not an advanced devotee, if you don't lift yourselves above the modes of material nature, then you'll become affected by those modes. Just like when someone's in the mode of passion, then as soon as someone says something to them, immediately we retaliate. Right? Someone says, oh, you were like this, and we say, no, you were like this. Like that. That's a mode of passion. Like that. So when we become a little above the modes, then we can assist others in also rising up above the modes. Sometimes someone becomes very angry and they say to us, oh, you did like this. But if we can be equipoised, right, and not become affected by the modes, then that person says, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to respond in this way. I don't have to deal with it in this way. And we can deal with it in a much more transcendental way.
So
how was Daksha killed by Providence
after speaking such angry words to Lord Shiva?
How was he killed by Providence?
Yeah.
Because Lord Shiva is Providence.
But Lord Brahma said that you don't have to kill him again. See, it's from this
side. Yeah, but he's already killed him. Lord Brahma is saying that you didn't have to do what you did.
But how he was killed by Providence?
Because Lord Shiva is Providence. He is the representative of the Lord. So he acted in such a way as to bring Daksha's destiny about. It's just the way they write it. What Lord Brahma is saying is that Lord Shiva, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to respond. Lord Shiva was right in responding, but Lord Brahma is saying that Lord Brahma is teaching for our benefit.
Is this translation again?
Yeah, it's the way Prabhupada writes it. That's all. Yeah, it's just the way Prabhupada writes it. That's all.
By uttering harsh words. How can somebody get killed by a
providence? Prabhu, I think at the beginning of the chapter, the remaining living lords which were present at the sacrifice, they went to Lord Brahma to please Lord Shiva. So Brahma is now along with the living lords with Lord Shiva to pacify him.
Yeah, it's just Lord Brahma is just trying to make a point. He's just saying you didn't have to kill him, that's all.
He's not saying that you don't have to kill him.
I know he may not be saying that, but that's what he's saying.
What do you mean?
What I understood about Lord Brahma...
Listen to your husband. What is he saying?
He's
Explain quickly. That's what he's saying. He may not be saying it, but that's what he means. Like, I might say to you something, but that's not what I mean. I'm just saying it. But what I'm meaning is something a little bit deeper. Sometimes people speak like that.
So if I utter some harsh words to anybody, does that mean the providence has already killed me? Has already killed me?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it means that you will get your reaction. As soon as you mistreat someone else, right, then providence is already...
It has already killed me.
Well, yeah, it won't be long. It means that by you doing that, it means you will get a reaction. That's providence.
Okay.
So it's only a matter of time until you get the reaction.
Mm-hmm. Of course, killing means the reaction.
Yeah. It means it will come.
Okay.
Okay, Daksha did like that. Right? So then it was just a matter of time until it came. What Lord Brahma is saying, you didn't have to do it. You should have just let it happen.
Yeah.
Shiva, you didn't have to kill him. He would have been killed anyway. Why did you have to do it? That's what he's teaching us, that devotees should not react. That's what they've been taught.
But it was because Sati was insulted and she was devoted.
Can you explain to her after the class? She'll explain to you later.
Mahaprabhu says, Vishnu Bhakt Nishkam Atev Shant. Always
peaceful. See, that's the answer. Okay, where are we up to?
50.
My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of a portion of the sacrifice, and you are the giver of the result. The bad priests did not deliver your share, and therefore you destroyed everything, and the sacrifice remains unfinished. Now you can do the needful and take your rightful share. My dear Lord, by your mercy, the performer of the sacrifice, King Daksha, may get back his life. Bhaga may get back his eyes, Bhrigu his mustache, and Pusha his teeth. O Lord Shiva, may the demigods and priests whose limbs have been broken by your soldiers recover from their injuries, by your grace. O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. So, it is pointed out here that a devotee will submit to the will of the other devotees. This is how we take our guidance. Just like we said in the class, the Bhagavad Gita class this morning, that Tamal Krishnamaraj, he said one time that I don't trust any one person's judgment, including my own. So we should not trust one person's judgment. We always act under the guidance of the devotees. We always take consultation of the devotees. We don't just go and act like that. We don't just follow one person. Right? But we check. We have a checking system. Right? We check amongst the devotees. And when the devotees give their blessings, then we understand, okay, this is what I should be doing. Because the devotees are blessing me. Devotees are saying, yes, you should go and do it. Like that. So we have our different guides. You know, we have several devotees who we listen to regularly. And when they all concur, when they all say, yes, this is what you should do, then you take this as Krishna's blessing or arrangement. So Lord Brahma is indicating to Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is more powerful than Brahma, but Lord Brahma is saying to Lord Shiva, it would be good if you rectified things. So he doesn't have to, but he takes the indication of the devotee. Oh, the devotee is saying, I should rectify. So this is the Lord's desire. So I will surrender to that desire. So that's how the devotees must react. If the devotees give us an indication, the devotees indicate to us, I want you to act in this way. Sometimes we may not want to do it. But the devotees are indicating, I want you to act in this way. I want you to do this. Then we surrender to that. Because we take this as Krishna's will. This is Krishna's desire. So when the devotees give us some indication, then we must surrender to the devotees, then everything becomes auspicious. So Lord Shiva, he surrenders to Lord Brahma's desire. Lord Brahma says, please, rectify the situation. So in the next chapter, then he rectifies the situation. So Prabhupada says in the first paragraph of the purport, he says, all activities should be aimed towards Krishna's pleasure. This is the meaning of yajna. That was the defect in Daksha's yajna, was that it was not being done for Krishna's pleasure. And when you do not do something for Krishna's pleasure, then the result becomes inauspicious. So Daksha, he was more interested in pleasing the devas as opposed to pleasing the Lord. So this is the situation in India these days. People want to satisfy the devas, not the Lord. So everything becomes inauspicious. Because if you don't aim at satisfying Krishna, then everything will not be auspicious like that. So it has been indicated that the purpose of any yajna is to satisfy Krishna. That's why we do the yajna. It is only for Krishna. That's why we do anything. Why do we do the activity? Because it pleases Krishna. That's why we do it. Otherwise, why are we doing it? Otherwise, we don't do it. We don't act. Unless some activity is connected to pleasing Krishna, then we don't do it. That's the purpose of every sacrifice. Right? Everything we do is a yajna. Everything we do is a sacrifice. But what is the ultimate purpose of everything that we do? It is to please Krishna. Is Krishna satisfied? If Krishna is satisfied, then we're happy. Right? How does Prabhupada say we know if Krishna is satisfied? Yeah, that's one way. The guru is satisfied. The devotees are satisfied. Yeah. Yeah, but we may be satisfied. That may be our mind. It may not be from the internal energy. Now, one way Prabhupada says, then you go and look at the deity's face. Well, just like after class, most of the devotees will go and see Radha Balabha and Gaur Nithyananda, Jagannath Balabha and Subhadra. And then Prabhupada says, when they are smiling at you, now, this is the barometer of bhakti. You understand? Oh, they are pleased. They are satisfied. So when the deities are satisfied, then we understand. We're acting for their pleasure. When the devotees are satisfied with us, when the devotees are happy with us and they're giving us their blessings, then we understand Krishna is happy. When the guru is satisfied, we understand. This is how we understand. Okay. Otherwise, why are you doing what you're doing? Okay. So, Prabhupada says in the second paragraph that after any yajna, prasadam must be distributed. And you cannot have any program in Krishna consciousness and not distribute prasadam. Prabhupada said every program must be accompanied with prasadam distribution. Whenever we have a home program in our house, or whenever we go out preaching, whenever we do any activity, we must distribute prasadam. Because when prasadam is distributed, everyone becomes satisfied. Just like last night, we had Srila Jabhataka Swami's Vyasa Puja. And I was feeling terrible physically, because at the farm, we put in this cow dung floor, and then we had to seal the floor. So for the last 5 days, I've been sealing the floor with linseed oil, putting oil on the floor to seal it, to keep it tight. And the last 3 days, we had to use mineral turpentine. So I was putting this oil and turpentine, but then after 3 hours a day, putting the turpentine has very strong fumes, and I was feeling terrible, like very sick. Today I'm starting to feel more better because it's coming out of my system. So I was feeling terrible. So I was physically very like ill yesterday. So then we went to the Vyasa Puja, and then after the Vyasa Puja, then we had prasad. And as soon as you take prasad, you begin to feel not so bad. You begin to take prasad, because that is the point of prasad. Prasadam gives you satisfaction. It makes you feel purified and satisfied. Okay. So every yajna, every activity we perform, it must be accompanied with prasadam distribution. And that is ISKCON's glory, and that's the glory of this temple, Malva Mahaprabhu Mandir, is that there is no temple in the world outside of India which distributes as much prasadam, or which is distributed as much prasadam as this temple. This is Vedic culture, to distribute prasadam at the end of this sacrifice. Prabhupada mentions that after the sacrifice, the devas must be offered prasadam. Just like if you go to Nandagram in Vrindavan, hands up if you've been to Nandagram in Vrindavan. So if you go to Nandagram in Vrindavan, then after every day, after they offer the Raj Bowl, all the offerings to Krishna and Balaram, then they take the prasad and they offer it to Lord Shiva. Yeah, to Nandeshwar, to Shiva. That is the system, right? You must offer the remnants to the devatas. That is the system. Right? Not that you offer the bhoga directly to the devatas. Now that is not the system. The system is you offer it to Krishna and then you offer it to the devatas. Okay. So that is the actual Vedic system. Okay. In some temples they do like that. They have Shiva Linda. So after the prasad is offered, then you offer the prasad to the devatas out of respect to the devatas, because they are devotees. So what it means is that we offer the prasad to the devas, the bhoga to the devas, and the prasad we offer to the devotees. Take Krishna's remnants. Okay? So we should respect Krishna's prasad. Whenever prasad is offered to you, you must respect a morsel of that prasad. Someone offers you prasad, then you take, like when I went to Chaupati one time, Radha Gopinath temple, then I had a darshan with Radhanath Swami, and I brought some Mahaprasad from Vrindavan. I think it was from Radha Damodar Mandir, I can't remember, I think it was Radha Damodar. And I offered it to Maharaj, that Maharaj, please take some prasad. So he took a little morsel and then put it in his mouth, like that, onto the prasad. And then he opened his tiffin and then he put the Mahaprasad in the tiffin, which then he'd later distribute to other devotees. And when he opened his tiffin, he had Mahaprasad from, must have been sacred, because so many devotees come. You know, I thought, oh, I'm so special, I'm offering Mahaprasad to Maharaj, you know, or like that. But, you know, he's getting Mahaprasad all day. He probably gets like 10 different types of Mahaprasad all day from all over the world. Devotees always coming and offering Mahaprasad. So he put in the tiffin and then distribute that to others. But you must honour the Mahaprasad. Okay. And then Prabhupada says in the final paragraph of the chapter that in this age it is not possible to satisfy the devas by yajna, because we can't perform yajna. So the only yajna we can do in Kali Yuga is Sankirtan. But when you do Sankirtan yajna, the devas become satisfied. And we experienced this recently, because on Gaura Purnima, the day after Gaura Purnima, when we had Gaura Purnima, we did such an auspicious worship was done of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here in Melbourne. We worshipped the deities very nicely, and devotees did so much endeavour to satisfy the deities. So much yajna was done for the satisfaction of the deities. I went to the farm the next day and it poured rain. And then the other day we had Lord Ramachandra's appearance day. And we did a small program, a big program here, and a small program at the farm, in honour of Lord Ramachandra. Next day, it rained. This is the system. The devas has become satisfied when you worship the Lord by Sankirtan Yajna. So we just keep worshipping the Lord sincerely as we can, worship the deities, do Sankirtan Yajna, and devas will look after everything. Right? It's only because people are not doing that we have all these problems in the world. Yeah, we have drought and we have financial problems. At the farm we don't have these problems. The rain is coming too much. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So next week we'll begin chapter 7, and after 2 weeks we'll finish chapter 7. So your exam will be in 2 weeks from now. So your open book exams are due 1 week ago. So please. And also with your fees, try to keep up to date with your fees also. Makes the running of the course easier.